Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up outside San Francisco and played wide receiver for the Pittsburgh Steelers for 9 seasons. He helped them win 4 Super Bowls and was the MVP of Super Bowl X. Famous for his trademark spectacular game-winning catches, he went on to become chairman of the President's Council on Physical Fitness. In 2006, he was the Republican candidate for governor of Pennsylvania. His name? Lynn Swann. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to the MVP of Super Bowl X, Mr. Grace, Mr. Artistry, Lynn Swann. Lynn, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Jack, thank you for having me on.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad?
Well, that's a long story. What would you like to know?
What was your childhood like? Youngest of 3 brothers. And tell me about your mom and your dad.
I think from my perspective, my childhood was fairly normal. I'm the youngest of 3 boys. I was born in Alcoa, Tennessee. Moved to California when I was 2. My parents did, and they brought me along, thankfully. Then, you know, all my schooling and education was in California, from grade school, junior high, high school, and then I graduated from the University of Southern California. My mom and dad have been married for a long, long time now, and are still living and doing well. My dad was a custodian for the school district for many years before he retired. My mom was a dental assistant for a number of years. Then she left that job and became an attendance clerk at Aragon High School in San Mateo, California, before she became head of minority programs for the San Mateo Unified School District, and where she retired a couple of years ago. So they're both in California. And that's it. Again, growing up, I always thought of my life as being, you know, pretty normal. Parents worked very hard, didn't have a whole lot of extra money for a lot of different things. But as kids growing up, we never felt like we wanted for a whole lot. So it was good. Good, strong family.
Lynn, there's so much talk today about bullying, you know, when we can't bully kids. You're the youngest of 3 sons. You're named Lynn because your mom wanted a son. You're 8 years old, and your mom enrolls you in dance lessons. How did you withstand that undoubted bullying that you got?
Well, I mean, I think my experience was very different. I didn't get bullied. You know, I danced. I played basketball very often, and actually in 2 years of junior high school, whenever I made the A basketball team. But in the 7th grade, their games were on the day I had dance classes, so I switched to the B basketball team. And then my 8th grade year, I thought I had it all figured out. The same thing happened. I went back to the B basketball team so I could continue my dance lessons. But I never experienced any kind of bullying from the fact that, you know, I took these dance classes. You know, I enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. You know, yes, my name is Lynn, and my mom and dad thought they were going to get a girl, but instead they got another boy, but they named me Lynn, and that was more, I make a joke of it, but it was really after the doctor who delivered me. His name was Dr. Lynn F. Curtis, so they named me after him. You know, I know all there's a lot of attention about bullying, and certainly we should get kids away from that. I think... it's probably gone on for a long time, but in our today's world of you know, instant media and internet services, we hear more about it. Things go viral, and you know, certainly we should put an end to it. But my case growing up, it was never an issue.
Lynn, those dance lessons that started as an eight-year-old, later, how did they help you on the football field in the NFL?
Well, I think when you play football, you bring a number of things to bear, and they're all about the assets and skill sets you have. I think it's about, you know, maybe you have some natural talents and gifts in terms of the ability to jump or speed or quickness, and so you bring those things to bear. But much of what we bring to bear is about repetition at practice, developing those tools so that you don't have to think about it. They seem very natural. They seem responsive immediately in any particular situation because you practice and train so hard. I think, you know, in my case, when I took dance classes and then I took gymnastics classes, I worked on trampolines. I think it gave me a greater sense of body control and a great sense of balance. So it allowed me to do things on the football field that having that dance experience brought to bear in that situation. So I know that there are a number of situations where I could not have made catches or I could not have got my body in position to make catches had I not had that kind of training in my background.
We're talking to Lynn Swann, who was famous for his trademark spectacular game-winning catches. Lynn, tell us what it was like playing for the legendary USC Trojans.
Well, USC was a great experience in playing for the University of Southern California and Coach John McKay, a terrific coach, and a great team that he had assembled at the time I was there. We were national champions in 1972 and repeat participants in the Rose Bowl. In the 1974 Rose Bowl, so back-to-back 73 and 74 Rose Bowl games, and we were 1-1. But there was a great assemblage of talent and people on that team, folks I got a chance to play with, who understood why we were there and wanted to win and wanted to get the benefits of an education at the University of Southern California, and were committed to one another. And today, we are still committed to each other as friends and alumnus of the school and former Trojan football players wanting to see the school continue to grow and do well. You know, we're excited about where the school is going under the leadership of its president, Max Nikias, who is doing a phenomenal job of moving USC forward in all areas, academics, research, alumni growth, and sports. So we continue to do well and be proud of our school. Sure, there are some stumbles here and there, but when we do that, we have to correct those things that we did not do well and then move forward on a positive basis.
We're talking to Lynn Swann, who was drafted by the Steelers in 1974, along with three other Hall of Famers, by one team in one draft year. When we come back, we'll ask him about that. And I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Lynn Swann, who was poetry in football pants. In the 94 years of the NFL, there have been 300 people that have gotten into the Football Hall of Fame. You get drafted in 1974 by the Pittsburgh Steelers. You're the 21st pick, the first wide receiver. The Steelers take you. Lynn, later on in that same draft, the Steelers also draft Jack Lambert, John Stallworth, and Mike Webster, three more Hall of Famers. It's never happened since or before. How'd they do that?
Well, I think the way the Steelers were able to do that is that they had a very talented scouting department, and they were able to assess the talent that they wanted and or needed for their football team to have success. So, you know, under the leadership of Art Rooney Jr. at the time and a number of people in that scouting department, they were able to find the kind of talent that fit the team. And not all of it was necessarily talent that was going to be drafted in the first round, but I think it was talent that when you measure it and you look at it and you see the heart of the players, all of these guys were first-round players, if you will. And so they decided and made strategic decisions in the draft that, well, you know, if we don't take Lynn Swann, maybe he's going to go in the first round. We won't have a shot at him, and so I get drafted first. They decide that, you know, they can wait until the second round to get a Jack Lambert out of a small school like Kent State. Mike Webster was at Wisconsin. He was small, played center, strong guy. So they figured based on that, people wouldn't necessarily take Mike early, so he might be available. And I think they felt the same way, obviously, with John Stallworth. So when you look at it, they were correct in that assessment. But it's not just the four of us going into the Hall of Fame, which obviously is very is unique. We're the only draft class to have four people to go into the Hall of Fame out of one draft class. But there were also a double-digit number of players, rookies, draft choices, and free agents who made the 1974 team of the Pittsburgh Steelers go on to win their first Super Bowl. So we're very proud of that draft class and very proud of the talent that was there. But all of the credit really has to go to that scouting department and to the entire brain trust of the Pittsburgh Steelers, who figured out the tactics and strategy of the draft in 1974.
Speaking of the brain trust of the Steelers, your head coach, Chuck Knoll. Lynn, what's the biggest things he taught you?
Well, I think Chuck was a person who really prepared well. I can only remember one time in my entire career that I thought that we had a game plan that wasn't maybe, you know, that I didn't have confidence in. And that was because players were hurt. There was some confusion on play calling in terms of what these new plays we tried to put in the short week, what they were, and it just didn't work. And it showed in our offensive confusion in that particular game. But every other game I ever played did. Chuck had a game plan that was spot on. Gave us a chance to win. Gave us the confidence we could win with it. And Chuck treated us like men. He didn't treat us like little boys. He expected us to be professionals. And he said as much to the team early on. He said, look, if you have 14 or 16 games to play every year in a season, he said, you know, if you expect me, or if I have to get you motivated every week to play each one of those games, then there's something wrong. You should come motivated and be prepared to play. You've got 16 games in the entire season, and then the playoffs. And if you're not here to be a professional, and if you can't motivate yourself to win, then maybe you're on the wrong team. And I believe him. I think it was correct attitude to have.
We're talking to Lynn Swann. Kurt Gowdy once said, I quote, "Lynn Swann is the Baryshnikov of football." Lynn, the Steelers organization have won 6 Super Bowls. They won 4 in the 9 years you were with them. How do you explain the success that the Steelers have had?
Well, I think, number one, we've had coaches, starting with Chuck Knoll, who had an understanding of what they wanted to accomplish and how they wanted to accomplish it. You can have a number of different philosophies on how to run the ball, pass the ball, what kind of defense you want to play, what kind of formations. But the key is then to go out and find, once you settle on what you want to do, the key is to go out and find the right players who fit that system, who can execute it and make it work. And Chuck was able to do that in the 70s. And so we have a high degree of consistency in what we did, so we were able to win those 4. I think the next 2 that came along, and when you think about the fact that we won Super Bowl 14, and it was 16 years later before the Steelers got to another Super Bowl, and Super Bowl 30, and then it was 26 years from 14 to Super Bowl 40 before we won one. But the Steelers consistently pushed to get their team ready to be competitive, and we were competitive, just missing Super Bowls, you know, in between there. But I think when you look at what Bill Cowher did and pulling that talent together, then when you look at what Mike Tomlin was able to do with that talent when he came in and to win another Super Bowl. So winning 6 in that period of time, I think, has been phenomenal. It's been the consistency of the organization to work within the structure that football, the NFL, has presented, free agency, salary cap, being able to draft players, trade for players, and maneuver within that system, have all been the things that have allowed us to be competitive and give us a chance to get to a Super Bowl, thus winning 6. out of the 8 Super Bowls we've been in over these years, over these decades now.
After you treated all of America to 9 great years as a receiver, you then had us watch you for 29 years with ABC Sports as a sports analyst and broadcaster. Talk about that chapter of your glorious life.
Well, I'm fortunate in the sense that when I graduated from USC with a degree in public relations, I always felt that that would be a valuable asset to be able to communicate, problem solve, and move forward. And while I played professional football, I worked as a broadcaster. I started in 1976 in the off season, my second off season with the Steelers, working and doing a couple projects for ABC Sports. And then under the direction of then news director Dennis Watson, I was able to get a job at KBC-TV in Los Angeles and work there doing stories locally and doing special projects and then one-off assignments for the network. I was offered a job by CBS while I was still playing football for full-time, but I didn't think I was ready to leave football and to go into broadcasting football, broadcasting professionally at that time. And then in 1982, during my 9th year, I got a call from ABC. They were getting ready to do coverage to cover the United States Football League in the spring. The Olympics were coming up. I felt it'd be a great opportunity to be able to get a lot of broadcasting under my belt to maybe be prepared to then get assigned, to an Olympic team and broadcast in 1984. And thought, how many more years am I going to play football at this particular point in time? And after 9, it just seemed that while I might have wanted to play 10 years in football, it just seemed like there was an opportunity in front of me that was an undeniably right thing to take and to do. And so that began the rest of that, time period for me as a broadcaster working with ABC, covering Olympic events, covering Monday Night Football, college football, wide world of sports, a series of events, all over the world. And so it was exciting. It was fun. And I was honored to have the career for so long.
When we come back, we'll listen to a portion of Lynn Swann's induction speech to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, compliments of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible. And thanks to Dave Baker and the rest of his team at the Football Hall of Fame. Here's a portion of Lynn Swann's induction speech in 2001.
To present Lynn Swann, his running mate at wide receiver with the Steelers for all those great years. His time, too, will come as well. If you got Lynn Swann, you got to have John Stallworth.
Lynn's a man of uncompromising principles and a strong sense of integrity and loyalty. We joked early on when we started talking about his inception speech about him saying something profound and leaving everybody with that statement. But after I thought about it for a little while, I thought that, a little note will be placed on what we say, but the far greater emphasis will be placed on our actions or his actions in getting here. Those actions speak profoundly of the caliber of athlete that Lynn Swann is, but even more to the greatness of the man. Please help me to bring forward one of the greatest wide receivers to ever play the game, my friend Lynn Swann.
Thank you, Pittsburgh. Thank you, Western Pennsylvania, all of Pennsylvania, thank you. If we're going to call someone the best, and if you think of me as being the best and I'm number one, well, I think we have to broaden that thinking. It has to be a 1A and a 1AA. I'm not saying who's 1A, but John and I are 1A and 1AA, side by side. I could not be here without the overwhelming support of Dan Rooney and Chuck Noll. I know that last year when Dan Rooney stood here at this podium, as proud as he was to be following in his father's footsteps, who also stood here and accepted the award of being inducted into the Hall of Fame, that he felt that maybe standing here might take something away from a player going into the Hall of Fame. Dan Rooney deserves to be here for his great contribution to this game, regardless of what player does or does not go into the Hall of Fame. He is a cornerstone of the National Football League and keeps this league running in the right direction. So I'm happy that he is standing here behind me, sitting behind me to share in this day, to know I fully appreciate all that he has done. And to Chuck Noll for his unwavering support in saying that I belong here on the steps of Canton and giving me the opportunity to play this football game. The virtuous part of having this patience also means that the day I was selected to the Hall of Fame this last January couldn't have been a better day, because it would have been the 100th anniversary of the birth of Art Rooney Sr., the founder of this football team. If 14 years had not passed, then I would not be here today with the great patience and support and love of my wife, Charina. And being able to stand here in front of you and having my two sons, Schaefer and Braxton, who are 5 and 3 years old, to be here and be a part of this afternoon. I'm glad 14 years passed so I could have this love and this family sharing this moment with me. But the beginnings of all of this come from my mother and father and instilling me a faith in God, that if I walked that path and paid attention to the details of life and faith and my family, everything would be okay. Because I'm the youngest of three boys, whom my mother named Lynn because she wanted to have a girl. Now, if you thought that was tough, you try leaving football practice with a pair of tights named Lynn at an all-boys Catholic high school. You'll find yourself learning a few moves. I want to thank my mother, because when I was in junior high school, I received a scholarship to go to Serra High School in San Mateo, California, and I did not want to go to this all-boys Catholic high school. My mother made me go. She made me go, and the foundation of that education and what she instilled in my life have brought me here today. I want to thank my father, Willie Swan. And when I first started playing football against my middle brother, Calvin, who's also here, Calvin is a much better athlete. And my father said, well, I'm not sure, Lynn, if you're going to be so good. So when he took me out to buy me the football shoes, I wanted the really expensive white ones with the stripes and to look really cool. My father said, I don't know, son. I don't know. If we shouldn't be investing that much money in your shoes. You may not be wearing them that long. All right? And I felt kind of bad. But you know what the important thing was? The important thing was my father was with me, and he took me to get those shoes. And he was at every game I ever played. I was not very good. I was not a very good football player when I started out. But I had my family support. I wanted to be as cool as my oldest brother, Dr. Brian Swan, who is here. And I wanted to be as gifted as my brother Calvin, but I didn't possess their abilities or talents at that age to really move forward. But there were people who helped along the way, like Gene Robinson at College Park Junior High School. There was my coach, Jesse Freitas, at Serra High School, Nick Carboni, Frank Nolan in basketball, who instilled in me a confidence and gave me a work ethic that said, you can achieve. You heard Ron Yeary talk about an assistant coach at USC, Marv Goo. Marv Goo helped me to grow up to be a man while I was at USC. He taught me tradition, he taught me spirit. He taught me how to stand on my own 2 feet and work hard in the face of adversity. And so Marv Goo, I would thank you from the bottom of my heart for that time. My receiver coach, Willie Brown, gave me the confidence my senior year to go out and achieve, because I did not have the dream of being a professional football player. I thought I was going to be something far different than being a professional football player. I was still going to be Mildred and Willie's baby boy, but I was going to work in some other area. But Willie Brown gave me the confidence my senior year that I could be an All-American player and I could move forward. I was drafted by the Pittsburgh Steelers, and you know, coming from California, you know, Dan Rooney called me up on the phone and said, "We're thinking about drafting you." I said, "Fine." I didn't know much about Pittsburgh. Didn't know much. I knew there was some guy, because every time he caught a pass, he was fairly religious, because every time he caught a pass, they called it an immaculate reception. There is, for me, no great wisdom that I can give you about this game. I can only tell you that what brought me here was the love of my friends who are sitting here, my extended family from California to Pittsburgh, the Hughes, the Gustafsons, the Channons, the Lieblers, the Pearlsteins, people I have loved who have treated me like family, who have gotten me through. My own parents couldn't be there to spend Christmas with, Thanksgiving, and to share hard times and difficult moments. Those are the things that got me through, and the faith of the people here. Before I sit down, I'm going to send one shout out to a man who waited even longer than I did to be inducted into the Hall of Fame, a great Pittsburgher who is going to have a great moment on Sunday. Bill Mazeroski is going into the Hall of Fame in baseball, in Cooperstown. And I know it is going to be the greatest weekend sports history for the city of Pittsburgh we have seen in a very long time, but it will not be the last. It is still more to come. Thank you very much.
That was Lynn Swann, a man of grace and class. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. We're talking to Lynn Swann, who was known as the Baryshnikov of football. Jumping ahead to 2001, in your 14th year of eligibility, you're elected to the Football Hall of Fame. You go to Canton with your family in first weekend of August. Talk about that weekend in Canton, Ohio.
Well, I think for every player who's inducted, it's a great honor, but certainly, you know, it means you also were on a team where players supported you, coaches supported you, and gave you an opportunity when the team needed you to perform well. And so I was, you know, very grateful to my teammates and the organization that, you know, that I was getting this particular honor. After being on that that final list for 14 consecutive years, it was getting a little old. I think I hold the record, one which I wish I didn't have, but I hold the record for having the longest consecutive time on the finalist list without going in 14 years. Or before I went in, and it took 14 years. So for me, there was it was a great honor. There was certainly a sense of relief that this was done, that I wouldn't have to go through it anymore and not have my name called. So very exciting to get back to Canton and to go through the process and the induction ceremony. The folks in Canton treat you like you're royalty while you're there and your family. And they truly do make you feel like this is a Hall of Fame, like this is the penultimate goal for any individual who ever played played professional football. So it was a great weekend, great people, great experience, and great memories.
You've gone back now 13 years, and every induction weekend on Friday afternoon, there's a Ray Nitschke Hall of Fame luncheon just for the Hall of Famers. Very famous. Talk about that luncheon each year.
Well, we don't talk about that luncheon. That's just it. It's just for the players. And we sit, we discuss, we talk, we listen to different things, we review different things, but it's a players only meeting. And it can be very inspiring at times and very informative at others, but it's a great opportunity and for the guys who are being inducted to be a part of a really personal and protected conversation between members only.
In 2002, President George W. Bush asked you to be the chairman of the President's Council on Physical Fitness. What were your biggest duties in those 4 years?
Well, certainly trying to educate America and people and motivate people in America to be more physically active. We spend billions of dollars on health care, on preventable illnesses and diseases, preventable by diet and exercise. And so we need to get people moving in the right direction. And it's not that you need to be a professional athlete. It's not about, trying out for the Olympics. It's not about any of those things. But it's about movement. It's about physical movement and activity that makes your body stronger and certainly gives you the ability to focus better and I think enhances everything else that you do. So we need to get people moving actively because our healthcare costs are going, are just skyrocketing. We could save, if we just got 10% of the American population that does not exercise and considered to be obese at this particular time, if we got 10% of them to exercise and move forward, we might save on an annual basis, $7 to $10 billion a year.
Since 1980, Lynn Swann, you've been the national spokesman for Big Brothers Big Sisters of America. Tell us about that organization.
Well, it's the number one mentoring organization in America. It's over 100 years old. It's one-to-one mentoring, community-based programs where an adult, a big, is matched up with a young person who's under 18, what we refer to as a little, to help them grow and to mentor them. And we're a true mentoring organization, so this is not necessarily a tutorial program, but our kids in the program do better academically in school than those who are not matched with a big brother or a big sister. It's not a drug prevention program, but the kids in our program are less likely to abuse drugs or alcohol. It's not a behavioral program, but yet all the kids in our program are less likely to have behavioral problems than other kids are out there. So it is a true mentoring program where the bigs are learning as much about themselves and helping their littles as much as possible to help them to develop into the best person they can be, whatever that might be.
In 2006, Lynn Swann, you decide to get into politics and you run for governor of Pennsylvania. Why?
Well, I thought at the time that I could help Pennsylvania, that we needed people to come in who were not looking to be or were professional politicians. In other words, running for one position after another, year after year after year, or the same position year after year after year, thinking that this is their career. We need people to come in and bring other skill sets to bear on another thought process, a different point of view, to update government in terms of creating more technology and making it more modern, using better business practices across the board to make government as efficient as a well-run company. And I think most people in this country would certainly agree that doesn't sound like government. That doesn't sound like local government or state government or national government when you talk about running and operating at a high level of efficiency. And I felt like I could help Pennsylvania in that manner. The voters of Pennsylvania decided otherwise, and so I didn't win the election. But I still think that there's a need for people to come in from outside of the typical political structure and government structure to bring their assets and skill sets to bear on government.
Lynn Swann, a few years ago I read a book, Man of Steel and Velvet. And Lynn, you embody that. You've got a grace about you. If there's a listener that says, how do I get that? What would you tell them?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it really depends on the individual. I think I was fortunate in the sense that, my mom wanted me to be involved in these dance classes. I was a hyper child, and she felt like I should really get engaged in something that would kind of take the edge off. And she didn't think I was going to be a very good athlete, so she enrolled me in a dance class. But that just goes to show you that what we should be doing is as much as we can. We should have our kids trying different opportunities and having different experiences and engaging them in different ways so we can discover just what it is our kids are really capable of. And our kids will discover within themselves what they're capable of. And they'll find that they can do certain things. And if they push themselves to work hard, they could do it at a higher level than they probably ever thought they could. So I would encourage kids just to do more, experience a variety of things, challenge themselves, and do some things that are positive but maybe a little bit uncomfortable. So you know what it is to work through those things in adversity, and you train your mind and body to accept challenges and come out ahead.
As our time winds down together tonight, what advice would you give to our young listeners?
Well, for young kids who are out there, you know, I think number one, understand who you are. Understand as much about yourself as possible. And then you can make better decisions for yourself. The world isn't always easy. Things aren't going to be laid out for you. What you think your path in life is going to be may not be a straight path. But you can keep it on course. It may meander right and left from time to time, but you've got to be able to focus and get it back on track. Understand what life is about, what right and wrong is, to create for yourself a real framework. The important thing is no one's going to be perfect. But if you have a framework of your life and where you think it should go, if you step out of that framework, if you cross the line and do something that's wrong, and then you know it's wrong. Then you know what you have to do to get back in that framework. I think many people who make mistakes and don't recover are those young kids who really don't understand when they do something that's wrong. They make excuses. They rationalize that this is okay. Somebody else did it. My friends are doing it. I can do it. And that's not the case. If you have a real strong sense of faith and who you are and what is right and wrong, when you make a mistake, you can get yourself back on track, and that's the key.
Lynn Swann, what a shining example you are of the American dream. You live a life of class, grace, and artistry. Thanks much for being a great guest.
Thank you for having me on.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.
Believe in yourself.